Good morning, everyone. Good morning. We're operating on a particularly tight schedule this morning. It's my understanding that most people have washed and people should continue eating since benching with mezumin will take place afterwards. It's actually a good thing to make sure that you continue to eat a little bit, because if you started to eat and you go the whole shiur and you don't eat anything, shouldn't be such a long time till benching. So people who have washed are actually encouraged to eat a little bit during the shiur, but to try to do so in a quiet fashion. I want to thank all the co-sponsors that always sponsor Kol Yom Rishon. Thank you to Rabbi Yehuda Seif, to Gwen Horowitz for the logistics, taking care of all the organizational aspects on our side of things, to Yehuda Myers for driving Rabbi Schechter here to Bala Kinwood. Just to give you some sense of Rabbi Schechter's dedication to Torah, so there this morning, or early this afternoon at Yeshiva University, there's going to be a Hakmasa Sefer Torah, and it's really an honor of Rabbi Schechter. And despite the fact that it's early in the afternoon, it's nonetheless, Rabbi Schechter wanted to make sure to be able to be with us, to share with us some Divrei Torah. It's a reflection of his enormous dedication to being Marbitz Torah, to teaching Torah. But we ask that you show a measure of sensitivity after the shiur. He's going to have to leave immediately after the shiur to make it back on time. There are many things that can be said in introducing Rabbi Schechter, and I recognize that every second I stand up here, I'm taking away from the shiur, and that I shouldn't do so. But I just one word of introduction. My wife's grandfather, Zecharon Levracha, studied in the Slabodka Yeshiva. He was a Rav in Lithuania. He was a Rebbe in a yeshiva in Europe prior to the war. And he used to come to Rabbi Schechter's shiur in Queens. It's a shiur that's going on at least 30 years. And he said that the shiurim that he heard from Rabbi Schechter were better than any shiurim that they said in the Slabodka Yeshiva. He was in a position to make such a comment. So it's a tremendous schus, it's a tremendous merit to have Rabbi Schechter here with us. And without further ado, it's a pleasure to call upon Mary Rabbi of Herschel Schechter Shlita.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. The Rambam has a Sefer HaMitzvahs where he lists off the 613 mitzvahs. So he lists off mitzvahs asay, mitzvahs that you have to do. You have to put on tefillin, you have to say kiddush, you have to wear tzitzis and so on. And then there are mitzvahs loisas, the averis that you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to eat non-kosher food. You're not allowed to be mechal Shabbos and so on. So the Rambam writes that one who is a mechal Shabbos is in violation of an avera. And one who abstains from malacha on Shabbos, even though he's not doing anything bekumbi asay, he's just not doing malacha, has fulfilled the mitzvah saseh of Shabbosim. It's a kiyam mitzvah. Even though you fulfill a mitzvah passively by doing nothing, by not doing any malacha, you have fulfilled a mitzvah. It's a little strange. How do you consider that? Fellow goes to sleep on Shabbos and he doesn't know any malacha, he's fulfilled a mitzvah. So the Rambam says not exactly. It has to be a shvisa hanikeres. If the person abstains from malacha on Shabbos and such stami, he puts on pajamas and he sleeps away the whole 24 hours, then he hasn't violated the aver, but he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah. The Rambam says abstaining from malacha in a fashion that is demonstrative, and it's noticeable and it's obvious that it's because today is a holy day, so then he has fulfilled the mitzvah. So the Rambam explains that this is why the Chachamim introduced the prohibition of tiltal muktze. You're not allowed to handle things that are muktze on Shabbos. He says there are some people who are retired and who don't work all week long. Some people, let's say you're in an old age home. So someone else does the cooking, someone else does the laundry, someone else turns on the lights, turns off the lights, changes the laundry and everything. The person doesn't do anything, never lifts a finger all week long. So he abstains from malacha on Shabbos, but he doesn't do malacha all week long. So in order that it should be a shvisa hanikeres, it should be obvious and noticeable that he's abstaining from malacha because today is a holy day. So the rabbis introduced all the prohibitions of muktze. That's what the Rambam writes. That's a famous passage in the Rambam. The Ravid, who has a running commentary on the Rambam. Whenever the Rambam says something he's not too thrilled about, so he'll let you know. So the Ravid writes, I don't know, in my Gemara it says a different reason. The Gemara says that it's prohibited to handle muktzah because one is not permitted, one of the last of the 39 malachas on Shabbos. On Shabbos, the 39 categories of activity that are forbidden. So the last one is, you're not allowed to carry. You're not allowed to carry Dalat Amos and the Rishus HaRabim. You're not allowed to carry from Rishus HaYochid into Rishus HaRabim. So in order to protect people, in order to prevent people from carrying by mistake, so the rabbi said you shouldn't even handle anything in the house because you may forget and carry it out of the house. So really they wanted to prohibit us from handling anything in the house. But then you won't be able to eat any food, you won't be able to put on your clothes, you won't be able to put on your pajamas, you won't be able to move a chair to the table. So it had to be within reason. So whenever there are things that you really don't need on Shabbos, so then they said don't handle it at all because you may make a mistake and carry into the street. Things that you really need, so that they didn't want to make life, they wanted to make life a little difficult, they didn't want to make life impossible. So the Chachamim made it zera. You're not allowed to handle things that you don't really need. So that's what the Ravid says. And my Gemara gives a different reason. The Ravid is right. And the Gemara doesn't give the Rambam's reason. The Rambam thinks in addition to that reason that the Gemara gives, there's another reason that the observance of Shabbos should be a shvisa hanikeri. Should be noticeable that he's abstaining from malacha because of the fact that today is a holy day, today is Shabbos. It's interesting, the Gemara has a klal, the Gemara has a rule, called the Tikkun Rabbanon Kein Deraisa Tikkun. The laws of Muktzah are all Midirabbanon. So the Gemara has a rule, whenever the rabbis are interested in introducing a din Midirabbanon, a rabbinic enactment, they always formulate the din Midirabbanon along pattern after biblical dinim. The building blocks of the din Midirabbanon have to be concepts that exist on the level of Deraisa, on the biblical level. So the Gemara has a very interesting idea. I tell you, when I was in my early 20s, and Rabbi Soloveitchik gave shurim in the yeshiva on Masechah Shabbos, and the regular yeshivas, they never at that time, they never learned Masechah Shabbos. They learned Bava Kama and Gittin Suvis and so on. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to learn whatever he wanted to. So when he decided to learn Shabbos that year, we were stunned to find out what Muktzah is all about. None of us, we always had a misconception. So we were stunned to find the Gemara says that the laws of Muktzah were patterned after a din deraisa. Which din deraisa? The laws of Kabbalah's Tumah, of all things. If somebody is Tamei or something is Tamei, and it touches something else, so the Tumah can be transmitted. So the Gemara has, based on Pesukim Mechumash, there are four categories of things that can be Mekabel Tumah, that the Tumah can be transmitted to. Adam, Kelim, Ochlim, Amashkim. Food or beverages. It's a difference between an Oichel and a Mashke, so these are considered two different categories. Ochlim, Mashkim, Adam, people on the Kabbal Tumah, and Kalim, pots and pans and vessels on the Kabbal Tumah. So the Gemara says these four categories of things are things that have a hishtamshus, things that are useful. Whatever doesn't fall under these four categories is basically junk. So whatever is junk, you're not going to need to handle on Shabbos. So the Chachamim prohibited handling junk on Shabbos. So that's the main din of Muktzah, really is Eitzim Avonim V'Yofar. That's called in the Shulchan Aruch, that's called Muktzah Machmas Atzma, Muktzah Machmas Gufo. The thing has no Hishtamshus at all. And the Gemara has this stunning statement that the laws of Muktzah were patterned after the concept of Kabbalah Stuma. So whatever is considered junk, let's say you have a bottle that's smashed and you have the tiny little particles of glass, that's the original Muktzah. You have a hard-boiled egg and you take off the shell and you eat the egg. So the shell that's left is a piece of junk. It's not Adam, it's not Kalim, it's not Ochlim, it's not Mashke. When you have the egg in the shell, so the whole egg is labeled as food. When you're eating chicken and you have chicken with the bones, so the chicken is Michael Adam. People eat it. After you finish eating the chicken, you're left with the bones. So the bones are Michael Behema. The dogs will enjoy eating the chicken bones. Even if you personally don't have any dog in your apartment, but there's always someone in the neighborhood who will have a dog. Let's say if there's some kind of a food that's only miyuchud, only elephants eat it. So if you live near the zoo, so that food is called Michael Behem. If you don't live near the zoo, so it's not called Michael Behem, unless you personally have a pet tiger or a pet lion or whatever around the house. So if that food is Roy Lachila for tigers and you have a tiger, or there's a tiger in the neighborhood, so then it's called Michael Behem. But whatever the Shulchan Aruch says, whatever is edible for dogs, even if you personally don't have a dog, there's always someone in the neighborhood who's going to have a pet dog, so that's called Meichel Behema. So the original din of muktzah is something that's a piece of junk that has no hishtamshus whatsoever. Let's say we have a minhag, a very, very old minhag that's mentioned in the Zohar. It comes from the days of the Tanoim. That when we perform a bris, whether on the weekdays or on Shabbos, so after the moel cuts off the little bit of skin that's supposed to be removed, he puts it into offer, into sand. Based on a pasuk in Chumash, Mimono Afar Yaakov, in Nevuas Bilam, in Parshas Balak. So offer basically is muktzah. So how can you fulfill this minhag when you perform a bris on Shabbos and Yontif? How can you push the orla into offer? So in the Shulchan Aruch, they quote from the Gaonim. The Gaonim were right after the days of the Gemara, before the days of Rashi and Tosfos, that if you designate this sand in advance, you set it aside, and you have in mind that you're going to use this to fulfill this minhag of putting the piece of skin into the offer, so then it remains muktzah. Offer is always muktzah. But since you designated it for that purpose, so the din says you're permitted to handle the offer for that purpose. It remains muktzah, but you have a het and tiltel for that purpose. Or let's say logs that you use to throw into the furnace. So logs are muktzah on Shabbos and Yontif. But on Yontif, you're permitted to burn logs if you want to keep the body warm. So if you designate these logs on Yontif for the purpose of burning them, so the Gemara says, "Lanitnu eitzim ela lahasaka." The logs remain muktzah, but because you designated it for that specific purpose, so you're permitted to handle it for that purpose, or for an equally important purpose, a more important purpose. Let's say there's some mishugoyim in Eretz Yisrael who consider themselves ultra-Orthodox, so they like to throw stones on those who are driving cars. So the stones are muktzah. So you have to designate the stone in advance. If you feel that it's such a big mitzvah to throw the stones at those who are driving cars, you have to designate the stones and the pebbles in advance. Otherwise, the stones are muktzah, so you're not allowed to handle them. But even after designating it, the stones are still going to be muktzah. It'll be a heter tiltel if that's considered a legitimate hishtamshus. You're permitted to handle a muktzah for that purpose. There is a concept that all the Tanoim subscribe to that's called muktzah machmas chisarin kis. That means like this. Let's say I have, years ago, a cell phone used to be a very expensive thing, and people used to be very makpid not to let the children handle a cell phone. Today, the kids play with everything. You buy another cell phone for another $20, it doesn't mean anything. But years ago, if you would have a cell phone, or if you would have a computer, a typewriter, something like that, so this is a kli shemalachtoli, so this is an instrument that's miyuchot for doing a malacha. You have a typewriter which you use to do malachas ksiba to write, or you have a cell phone and you call someone up. That's a malacha. Question: what kind of a malacha is it? But it's some kind of a malacha or another. So if you have a precision instrument which is really malach d'liyser, you're not allowed to use it on Shabbos for its main purpose, and you're makbid not to use it for anything else because it's such an expensive item, and you may break it. You may be mekalkalit. So that's considered, like on Shabbos, it's considered a piece of junk. Because the main hishtamshus, the main purpose that it has, the cell phone has and the typewriter has, you're not allowed to use it for. And you're makma not to use it for anything else because it's such a delicate instrument, it may break. So that's called muktzah machmas tisorin kis. We would have such an example in the following case. Let's say, on Erev Pesach, there is a din that you're not allowed to eat matzah. A din midrabbanan. Erev Pesach, you're not permitted to eat matzah. So there are different opinions whether this prohibition applies only Erev Pesach in the daytime. What about the night before Erev Pesach? The night Leil Bedikas Chametz. So there are different practices whether the prohibition against eating matzah even applies on Leil Pesach. So if one should assume that you're not allowed to eat matzah all 24 hours of Erev Pesach, so Erev Pesach, if Erev Pesach happens to be Shabbos, so the main purpose of matzah is that people eat the matzah, but you're not allowed to eat the matzah. Now, strictly speaking, you can feed the matzah to your dog, so you can give the matzah to little infants. They don't know what matzah is all about. They don't know what Pesach is all about. But this is hand shmura that costs $25 a pound. So the guy's not going to feed it to the dogs. If he wants to, he can, but which Meshugan is going to do that? So that says in Shulchan Aruch, if one should assume that you're not allowed to eat matzah even the night before Erev Pesach, all 24 hours, so if Erev Pesach happens to be Shabbos, so the main purpose of the matzah to be eaten by people is prohibited. Midrabbanan, you're not allowed to eat matzah. And it's so expensive, people are not going to feed it to the dogs. People are not going to give it to the little infants. We're going to say the davka for the Seder. So that would be considered muktzah machmas chisar and kis. The main hishtamshus is cut out, and you makbid because it's such an expensive item, you makbid not to use it for any other purpose. That would be considered muktzah. Let's say I bought my shmura matzah a month before Pesach. So also I'm not going to eat it. It's such expensive stuff, I'm going to save it for the Pesach night. But if you want to, you may eat it. There's no prohibition against eating matzah a month before Pesach. So then it's not considered muktzah machmas chisar and kis. Muktzah machmas chisar and kis has to start off like this. Have an instrument, a cell phone, or a typewriter, or let's say shmura matzah, it's forbidden to use the main hishtamshus. Erev Pesach, shulchalias b'shabbos, it's forbidden to eat the matzah on Erev Pesach, if you say it even applies all 24 hours the night before. And to use it for any other purpose, it's such an expensive item, no normal person will want to use it for the other purpose. So then the cell phone, or the typewriter, or the shmura matzah, this day, this Shabbos, is considered a piece of junk. It's an item that doesn't have any hishtamshus whatsoever, so then it would be considered muktzah. In Shulchan Aruch they explain that cash, money, is considered muktzah, not because we use money to go shopping, and it's a malacha, it's prohibited midirabban, it's not the klisha malach d'liyisa. Money is considered junk. Money is considered a piece of junk, because you can't do anything with the cash itself. You have a dollar bill, you can buy something with the money, but it's not like a fork or a knife or a chair or a table that has a hishtamshus. The cash doesn't have any hishtamshus. So cash is considered an item that doesn't have any hishtamshus. So it's like etzim abon of the offer. It's considered like a broken bottle or like eggshells or like junk because it has no hishtamshus. That's why it's considered muktzah. In Shulchan Aruch there is a dispute between the Mechaber and the Ramoa. Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Karo's opinion is usually accepted by the Sfaradim, and the Ramoa usually presents the position that's followed by the Ashkenazim. What about ball? Let's say a person wants to handle a ball on Shabbos. So the Shulchan Aruch writes that a ball is considered muktzah because in Hilchas Kabbalah's Tumah, a ball is not Mekabel Tumah. It's not Odom, Kelim, Ochel, Mashkim. It's not any of the four. So therefore it's considered a piece of junk. And the Ramah says, what are you talking about? But they manufacture balls. It's a multi-billion dollar business. People make money on selling balls. How can you say it's not a kli? A kli, for the purposes of muktzah, doesn't have to correspond 100% to the rules and regulations of kli for the laws of Kabbalah's Tumah. If the thing if it's designated for hishtamshus, so then it's considered a kli. There's such a machloikis on sukkis. We shake a lulav and an esrog, so the lulav, the esrog, is edible. The esrog is a food, a lemon. If you want to, you can eat it. Some esrogim are tasty. That's the teimanim have esrogim that are tasty. The eitz hadas, according to one version in the medrash, was an esrog. The esrogim that the Ashkenazim use tastes like lemon, so we wouldn't understand why should Adam Arishim, why should Chava want to eat an esrog if it tastes like a lemon. But they probably had a teimani esrog that tasted delicious. So the esrog is either edible, or the esrog you can use as a lemon to squeeze it onto food. So that's a michael, that's not muktzah. But the lulav, the hadasim and the arabis, is just twigs. So Tosfos writes on the Gemara Sukkah, the lulav, the hadasim and the arabis are basically muktzah. And the reason why you're permitted to handle it on yantar, because you designate it in advance. Like you designate in advance the offer in order to put in the little skin that you cut off by the bris. So if you designate the offer in advance to use it for that purpose, to push in the Or HaOrlo, so then you're allowed to use it. So Tosfos says the lulav, hadasim and arabas are basically muktzah on yantav. And the only reason why you're allowed to handle it is because you designated, you set it aside, you want to use it for the mitzvah. And the Chazon Ish writes that this Tosfos is very surprising. Tosfos is writing like the Mechaber's opinion, that the laws of the definition of Kelim, or the Mekelim, Ochlam HaMashkin, Kelim has to correspond to the laws of Kelim for Kabbalah's Tumah. He says, but we don't follow that. The Ashkenazim follow the Ramah. The Ramah says that a ball, even though a ball is not Mekabel Tumah, but it's a thing that has a hishtamshus. So the lulav, hadasim, and arabis is also a multi-billion-dollar business. People are making a fortune of money. This is a thing that has a hishtamshus. So the Chazon Ish says, you don't have to command to say that it's muktzah, but we designated it for this hishtamshus, and therefore you're permitted to handle it. It's not muktzah. The lulav and the hadasim and arabis have a hishtamshus. You use it for the mitzvah. So by definition, it's not considered muktzah. The Gemara has a principle that not only, let's say if you have money, not only is the money muktzah, but if you have a basis ledava ha'asur, if I have a, there's a location where I always have a jar in the kitchen, in the middle of all of the plates, I have a jar where I keep change. So not only is the money in the jar mukta, the jar is also considered mukta because it was designated. That's a basis ledava ha'asa. Whenever you put a dvar mukta on something else, so the thing on the bottom also becomes mukta. So this is a discussion in the Gemara Masechah Shabbos. Let's say on Erev Shabbos, a person comes home late from the office and he has to start getting ready for Shabbos. He takes out his wallet and he puts over here. He takes his watch and he puts over here. He takes everything. He takes a shower. He runs and he runs. And comes Shabbos, it turns out that he left his wallet with the money on top of a pillow or something like that. So would you say that the pillow becomes the basis of the davar ha'asa, has the status of mukta? So the Gemara distinguishes between shocheach and meniach. Did you leave it there on purpose, planning to leave it there the whole duration of Shabbos? Because that's where it belongs. I always put the cash in this jar. I designated one special jar to hold all the change. The dollar bills I keep in my pocket and the change I put over there. So if it's meniach, if I put my wallet there on purpose, that's the place where I want to leave the wallet, then the whatever is on the bottom is considered a basis, it's a basis to the mukta, so the thing on the bottom also becomes mukta. But if I just left it there, I wasn't thinking at all. So then the basis, the thing on the bottom, does not become mukta. So the Mishnah has like this, let's say I have a barrel of wine, and I want to open up I want to open up the barrel of wine, but on Erev Shabbos the fellow forgot, he left his wallet with the money on top of the barrel of wine, so the barrel does not become basis ledavar ha'asa because he didn't really designate it as such, he wasn't thinking. Or Taisus says there is a rule, ein oda moisa davar sheinu shaloi. If I walk into your house, I can't designate anything in your house. Taisus says like this, if I walk into your kitchen and I take fleshiks and milchiks and I cook it together, so it becomes treif. It becomes basa b'cholov. What happened to the rule, ein adam oiser dovish ein shalo? No one can make asa someone else's item. So Taisa said that rule only applies when you need intention. The basa b'cholov becomes treif even if it happens by itself. If the milk in the refrigerator, if the milk leaks into the flesh and it's sitting together for 24 hours, it becomes treif with no one intending to do anything. So if I come into your kitchen and I cook milk and meat together, so the rule ein ana mazad davar sheinu shaloi doesn't apply. It by definition it's basa b'cholov. But if I come into your home, I'm a guest for Shabbos, and I put my wallet, there's a barrel of wine in my bedroom, in the guest bedroom, and I put my wallet on top of the barrel and I plan to leave it there the whole Shabbos, and then the balabas comes, he needs the barrel of wine, the barrel doesn't become basis. I'm not the balabas to designate the lid of the barrel as a basis for my wallet. Ein ana mazad davar sheinu shaloi would apply there. So the Mishnah Masechah Shabbos has such a case. I have a barrel of wine. So if I put the wallet there, and I'm the balabas, and I intend to leave it there the whole duration of the whole Shabbos, so the whole barrel becomes muktzah. So even if I'll tilt over the whole barrel like this, sideways, and the wallet will fall off, but since the barrel was a basis, it had the status of muktzah in the beginning of Shabbos, so then we paskin la'alocha, this is a machlokes satanon, we paskin la'alocha, whatever was muktzah in the beginning of Shabbos, migud is katzoy le bein hashmashes, is katzoy le kuli yoyma. Bein hashmashes, the beginning of Shabbos, is koveya all the laws of Shabbos. So whatever was muktzah in the beginning of Shabbos will remain muktzah throughout Shabbos. But let's say if I'm a guest in someone else's home and I leave the wallet there, intending to leave it there the whole Shabbos, I'm not a balabas to designate anything about his barrel of wine. Or I'm in my own home and I wasn't thinking on Erev Shabbos. I came home from the office late and I was such a rush. I just left my wallet over there, not thinking, not planning that I want to leave it the whole duration of Shabbos. It's not where it belongs. So then the barrel never becomes muktzah. So if I tilt a barrel on Shabbos and the wallet falls off, so then I'm permitted to handle the barrel afterwards, because the barrel never became a basis of davar ha'asa, never became muktza. There is a principle, this din of basis of davar ha'asa, that even the basis, even the tin, even the tray on the bottom, also, let's say you bench lift. So the Gemara says, the flame is muktza on Shabbos, whereas on Yontav the flame is not muktza. Whatever has absolutely no hishtamshus whatsoever is considered muktza. On Shabbos, you can use the warmth that comes out of the flame, you can use the light that comes out of the flame, but you can't use the actual flame itself. You can't light another candle from the flame. So on Shabbos, the flame, the shoheves, is a davar shein bo hishtamshus. So therefore the Gemara says, In the days of the Tanoim, they used to bench lift with oil, with a wick, with a container. So the Gemara says, Hanach l'ner shemer psila, the cup and the oil and the wick, everything becomes a bosses to the flame. And the flame is mukta machmas gufo. The flame has on Shabbos, it's a dover that has no hishtamshes. On Yontif, the flame does have a hishtamshes. Not only can I use the light that comes out, or the warmth that comes out from the flame, to hold my hands and warm them, I can light another candle from the flame. So on Yontif, the flame is not mukta. So on Yontif, when you bench licht, it's not a bosses of dover ha'osif. So on Yontif, strictly speaking, that's what the purpose of the candles is, to illuminate the room. So on Yontif, if you want to take the candles to another room, you're allowed to carry the candles to another room. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to, because the flame is mukta, and everything below the flame, the candlestick with the candles, with the oil, with the wick, with the cup, and everything becomes mukta. So in the Shulchan Aruch, they discuss the situation where the balabasta benches licht, and she has, let's say, a silver tray on the bottom of the leichter, of the candelabra. So not only is the flame mukta, everything below it also becomes a mukta, the silver tray and the table and the tablecloth, everything is going to become mukta. So he can't move the whole table on Shabbos. So it says in the Gemara, in the Shulchan Aruch, they quote, if all you have on the table is the leichter with the candles, then taka, the whole table is going to become mukta. So he can't move the table on Shabbos. But usually the balabasta sets the table, so you have a lot of plates, and you have a sidur and ben shalach, and you have other svarim, you have a bottle of wine, and you have chalas on the table. So the table is a basis, l'davar ha'asur u'l'davar ha'mutar. The table is serving as the basis, the thing that holds the mukta and non-mukta thing. So therefore the table does not become mukta. But it depends which is more important. If I remember, there used to be a family who lived in my neighborhood. So on Friday night when the balabasta would bench licht, so she would have a beautiful silver tray. She had this beautiful candelabra. And then she had a 5-cent plastic salt shaker that they sold in the A&T. And so she would put the salt shaker on the same tray, so that after the candles would go out, they'd be allowed to take off the silver tray and put it somewhere else. So tomorrow morning, on Shabbos morning, there would be more room on the table, because they had this beautiful, gigantic candelabra and a beautiful silver tray. So that's not acceptable. It says in Shulchan Aruch that you want to declare that the tray on the bottom is not a basis, because it has not only the mukta, it has a non-mukta item. The non-mukta item has to be something that can compete with the mukta. So if you have, look, on the table, you have chalas and you have plates and silverware and a bottle of wine and svarim and sidurim and whatever, so then everything together is equally important to the candles, especially today that we usually have a chandelier. We have lights in the room also, so the candles that we light are not that crucial. Even if the balabasta is not going to bench licht, they shall forget the bench licht, will survive because the room is lit up. So the candles really don't add that much. So the candles, years ago, the candles were crucial. If you didn't bench lift the room, but I remember when I was brought up by my grandparents, my family lived in Philadelphia, and I had to go to yeshiva. So I went to Beth Jacob, till the Beth Jacob conked out, or whatever, the fifth grade, sixth grade, I forgot already what it was. So all the parents sent their children to Baltimore. My classmates went to Baltimore. Yechonon Zweig was a classmate of mine, Abiezer Cohen and others. They all went to Baltimore. My parents sent me to New York. So I stayed with my grandparents in New York way before my bar mitzvah in order to go to yeshiva in New York. My grandparents were very poor people, so they bench licht, and the rest of the room was dark. And when the candles went out, it was dark in the room. So the candles were very important in the room. The candles were much more important than other things in the room. So in order to offset the chashivas of the candle, if you had lit candles on the table, it's not enough to have a 5-cent salt shaker on the table. You have to have chalas, and you have to have plates, and you have to have silverware, and you have to have wine, and you have to have a lot of things. You do them on a lot of things. Today, the candles are not that significant because you have the lights around. The candles, to offset the significance of the candles, you don't have to have as much as you would have needed years ago. But that's the principle. Basis ledava asur, the basis becomes mukta. But if it's basil, it's a davar ha'asa, ula davar ha'mutar, and the davar ha'mutar is equally important to the davar ha'asa, then the bottom thing will not become mukta. In addition to the prohibition of mukta, which was clearly introduced at an early stage, the Talmud tells us that David HaMelech died on Shabbos. And he died in the sun. So his son Shlomo HaMelech sent a shaila to the Rabbanu, what should I do? My father's dead body is mutal b'chama in the sun. It's going to cause the body to decompose earlier. So he wanted to know, how can he move the body? So he gave Menetza how to move the body. So you see that the laws of Muktzah, according to the Talmudic tradition, existed already during the lifetime of David HaMelech. So then the Gemara says, later, Masech HaShabbos has 24 prokim, 24 chapters. The commentaries say because in the days of Tanakh it was a common practice based on Psukim and Yecheskel, it was a common practice that when a girl would get married, the Kala would wear 24 pieces of jewelry. Rings and nose rings and earrings and I don't know what else, necklaces. Where can you have 24 pieces? There are only 10 fingers. But they used to wear 24 pieces of jewelry. So because Shabbos is the Kala, we say, Boy Chala, so they wanted to make 24 pieces of jewelry for Shabbos. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi organized Masech HaShabbos. Could have made Masech HaShabbos 30 prokim, like a Kalim and like a Nezikin. Balakamba Bamatir Babasa has 30 prokim. So he could have made Shabbos 30 prokim. But he made it 24 prokim because Shabbos is the Kala. We always refer to Shabbos as the Kala. So those are the 24 tachshitim of Shabbos. It says in the Midrashim that every Talmud Chacham should also have 24 tachshitim, just like a Kala. So every Talmud Chacham should know the 24 Svarim of the Tanakh. Halavai the Talmid Chacham should know what the names of the 24 Svarim are. Forget about knowing the contents. A lot of them don't even know what the names of the 24 Svarim. There are 24 Svarim in Tanakh. A lot of Talmid Chacham would be surprised to hear that too. That there are Esmer V'Abba Svarim, 24 Svarim in Tanakh. Unfortunately, there are a lot of Christians who know the names of the books of the Bible better than the Talmid Chacham. Talmid Chacham have this bug in their head that Torah Shebichtav doesn't count. Only Gemara, only Mishnayos. That's not correct. Learning Torah Shebichtav is also a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Believe it or not. So the Masech HaShabbos has 24 prokim. So there's one whole perek dedicated to the prohibition of Tiltil Kalim. That's perek called HaKalim. So the Gemara says there, in that perek, Bimei Nechemia ben Chakalya Nishnas Mishnazu. When Ezra and Nechemia came back after the 70 years of Golus Bavel, they came back to Eretz Yisrael. So the Pasuk says they saw that there was rampant Chil Shabbos, that people were squeezing out their grapes, making wine on Shabbos. They were carrying in the streets, Rushusar Abim, and they were doing business, running business as usual. It was terrible. There was so much Chil Shabbos. They're not that they were reform or conservative. They didn't know the dinim. So Nechemi introduced Gzeiris and Gzeiris. The attitude was, if you live in a generation where the people don't want to be religious, what is it going to help? You're going to make more dinim derabbanan. They don't observe the biblical dinim. But if you live in a generation that people would like to observe the dinim, but they're ignorant, they don't know what the dinim are. So then the Gemara's attitude was, you have to introduce a lot of chumris midirabbanan in order to get the people used to observing, and then we'll observe more, then you can repeal all the dinim derabbanan. So Nechemiah ben Chakalya, Nechemiah came with Ezra to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash. He was the one who introduced the prohibition of Tiltil Kalim, that you're not allowed to handle a pen or a pencil or a screwdriver or a hammer, all these kind of things. So there's a problem. What do you mean? But the Gemara says the laws of Muktzah were already in the days of David HaMelech. When David HaMelech died on Shabbos, Shlomo HaMelech had a problem. How can I move the body out of the sun? So how does the Gemara say that it was introduced in the days of Nehemiah? So the Pashto says that we're talking about two different things. That's what we were shocked when we learned Masech HaShabbos. We were shocked to find out that the pen and the pencil and the screwdriver and the hammer are not muktzah. It's not muktzah at all. Muktzah is junk. Logs are muktzah. Pebbles are muktzah. Broken bottle. A broken bottle is muktzah. An eggshell is muktzah. A piece of junk is muktzah. Sand, offer is muktzah. But if you have a pen or a pencil, that's a kli. So a kli is not muktzah. A kli is a different prohibition. That's Tiltil Kalim was introduced by Nechemi ben Chakalya. The prohibition against muktzah not to handle anything that has no hishtam shesurah, a piece of junk that already existed during the lifetime of David HaMelech. And what Nechemi ben Chakalya introduced at the beginning of the period of the Bayis Sheni was the prohibition of Tiltil Kalim. So the Gemara says he introduced two different categories of prohibition. One is Kalisha Malachta Le'isr. The screwdriver and the hammer and the pen and the pencil is an item which you normally use to do a malacha. You're banging nails, that's a malacha. Or you screw in a nail, a screwdriver, a pen, a pencil, that's a malacha. So that's a klisha malachta le'isr. And then the Gemara says he even introduced the prohibition, you're not allowed to handle a klisha malachta le'heter, a table and a chair, you're not allowed to handle either. But for certain purposes, you're allowed to. So the Gemara has like this. Originally, when Nehemiah introduced the prohibitions because the people, there was rampant Chilul Shabbos. When he came back to Eretz Yisrael from Babel, there was Chilul Shabbos all over the place. So first he introduced many, many prohibitions. And then as the years went on, so the Chachamim saw that the people are becoming more and more observant, so they saw it's not necessary to have so many chumers. So they repealed little by little, they repealed some of these prohibitions, until it turned out that the halach is the way we have it today. So how is it today? So if you have a klisha malachta le'isa, you have a hammer, a screwdriver, a pen, or a pencil, you're not allowed to handle it, unless letzorach gufo, or letzorach mekomo. Let's say, the balabasta went to work on Friday. She came back late, and she didn't have a chance to set the table. So she comes Friday night. There's a screwdriver in the middle of the table. Or there's a hammer in the middle of the table. She wants to put a plate over there, and it's already Shabbos. So you're permitted to take the hammer or the screwdriver off of the table if it's tzorach l'mekomo. This is in the way. I don't want it to be here. I want to put it somewhere else. Or let's say I need the hammer to crack open a nut. I have a tough nut. So sometimes you can break it with your hand, sometimes you can't. Or I need, let's say, a screwdriver to open up a jar of pickles. It's very tight. So I'm allowed to use the screwdriver if I can do it with my hands or someone else can do it. You can do it by avoiding use of the screwdriver or the hammer. You should try to do that. But if you can't do it without avoiding this, so to use the hammer to crack a nut or to use the screwdriver to open up a jar, that's called letzorach gufo. You're allowed to, or letzorach mekomo. If it's in the place, it's in the room, it's in the place over here. I want to get it out of the place, so you're permitted to move. Not muktzah. If you have money on the table, money is real muktzah. So you have a broken bottle, you have a tiny little piece of glass. You're not allowed to move it out of the way letzorach mekomo because it's in the way. Muktzah mamish. You don't have this heter. This heter, you're allowed to move something, letzorach gufo, letzorach mekomo, because I want to use the screwdriver, I want to use the hammer, is only permissible by klisha malachta liyisa. And then if you have a klisha malachta leheter, let's say a table or a chair, so then the Gemara says, not only are you permitted to move it, letzorach gufo, I want to move the table, the table's over here, I need it over there. So you're permitted to move it, letzorach gufo, to move it somewhere else. Or letzorach mekomo, the table is in the way, I want to get it out of the way. You want to daven here, you want to have a conversation. So I'm permitted to move in the tzarach mekomo. You're also permitted to move it. A third heter, mechama letzel. Let's say I have a silver tray on the table, and I'm afraid so I have some silver item on the table. Chlisha malachta leheter, and I'm afraid someone's going to come and steal it. So I want to hide it. I want to take it off of the table and put it away to protect it. So the Gemara calls that mechama letzel. Sometimes you have an item in the sun, and the sun is going to ruin the item. So you want to put it in the shade. So if it's a klisha malachta le'iser, you're not allowed to move it mechama letzel to protect it. But if it's a klisha malachta leheter, it's a table or a chair, let's say it's a cardboard table, and it's in the sun and it's going to get ruined. I'm afraid it's going to get ruined in the sun. Or it's leaking over there, it's raining, so I want to move the table away. The table is not in the way, and the table, I'm not going to use it letzorach gufo, not letzorach mekomo. It's raining on the table. I want to protect it. It shouldn't get ruined. So the table is a klisha malachta leheter. So you're permitted to move it mechama letzel for the purpose of protecting it. Rav Soloveitchik, when he was learning the Gemara, told over an incident that he once visited by Balabas. He was eating by someone on Shabbos. And the Balabas was a little nervous. Anyone would be nervous if you'd be sitting with Rav Soloveitchik. He made everybody nervous. So the Balabas was sitting and playing with the glass on the table. He kept on twirling the glass as he was carrying on a conversation. So Rav Soloveitchik didn't say anything. And then the young child of the family touched a leichter, touched a candlestick that they hadn't lit candles in. It was sitting on a different table, a fancy candlestick. So the little boy touched the candlestick. He didn't move it, he just touched it. So the father started screaming at the little boy, "Muktzeh, muktzeh, you're not allowed to touch it." So Rav Soloveitchik said he couldn't control himself, he couldn't contain himself, so he told the father that the little boy only touched it, he didn't move it. So strictly speaking, the prohibition against handling muktzeh only applies if you move it, if you move the muktzeh. If you touch it, if it's a light item, and by touching it, it's probably going to move, let's say an egg, a basis in all the yantav, an egg, the hen lays an egg, and sham the yantav. So Mark explains why the egg is muktzah. We'll try to get to it a little later. So the Gemara says, Shulchan Aruch, it says, not only is it prohibited to move the egg, even to touch the egg is prohibited because the egg is such a light item, it's probably going to move. If you touch it, it's going to move. If it's a heavy thing, then it says in Shulchan Aruch, you're not concerned that by touching it, it's going to move, so that's permissible. So in Shulchan Aruch, it's interesting, they give the mashal, they give an example. What's a mashal of an item? Thank you. what's an example of an item that's heavy that's probably not going to move even if you touch it? So they say in the Beis HaKnesses, in the shul, they used to have big, heavy menorahs in order to illuminate the room. So the menorahs were sometimes screwed down to the floor, and sometimes they were not screwed down, but they were so heavy, like this stand is pretty heavy. So if you touch it, it's probably not going to move. So that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch, to touch the heavy menorahs in Shabbat Beis HaKnesses is permissible, because it's probably not going to move just by touching it. The prohibition of mukta is only to move it. Just parenthetically, in the beginning of the Reform movement, so they permitted playing musical instruments in the synagogue to enhance the prayer service. So they said, because in the Beis HaMikdash they used to play musical instruments on Shabbos, and since the synagogue is a Mikdash Miyat, the Pasuk in Yecheskel says that the Jews are going to be sent into Golus, but they're going to have a miniature Beis HaMikdash there. What's the miniature Beis HaMikdash? The Gemara says, Eile Bati Knesiyos Bati Midrashos Shebevavel. All the shuls and all the yeshivas all over the world are considered a miniature Beis HaMikdash. So just like, so the Reform Rabbi said, just like in the Holy Temple it was permissible to play the music to enhance the Hakrabas HaKrabanah, so too in the synagogue has the status of the Mikdash Miyat, it's also permissible to play music. Where did they get that Einfall from? They said, it says so in Shulchan Aruch, it says that even though you're not allowed to handle Muktzah, but the menorahs and the Beis HaKnesses you're allowed to touch. See, Haraya, that Ein Shvuz by Mikdash, just like in the Holy Temple, there's no Gzeira the Rabbanon against Muktzah, so in the synagogue also. So the Rabbanim pointed out, that's not what it says in Shulchan Aruch. It says it's permissible to touch the heavy menorahs and the Beis HaKnesses because they were screwed down to the floor and you can't move it. By touching it, it's not going to move. It's not because Ein Shvuz by Mikdash, that the synagogue has the same status as the Holy Temple, because Mikdash Meyat, and just like in the Beis HaMikdash, there's no Shvuz, there's no Gzeiras. So in the synagogue also not. So that was, just parenthetically, that was a big mistake that the early Reform made. So getting back over here, so the young child of the Balabas touched the leichter, touched the candlestick that was on the other table. He didn't move it, he touched it. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said he couldn't control himself. So he told the father, the little boy just touched the leichter, he didn't push it. So strictly speaking, he didn't violate anything. But you're sitting over here and playing with the cup the whole time. So he said, that's prohibited. That's mikra din, that's also. On Shabbos, a cup is a klisha malachta lehetta. A klisha malachta lehetta, you're permitted to move the tzor gufa if you want to drink out of the cup. Tzorach mekoma, if the cup is in the way, you want to move it. Or if you're afraid, it's going to get ruined. Mechama letzel. You're afraid someone's going to walk off, steal a cup, so you want to protect it. But shelo letzorach klal, to handle a kelim totally unnecessarily, is not allowed. So he tells the father, you're sitting and violating the whole prohibition of tilted kelim the whole time you're playing with the cup. It's totally shelo letzorach. And the little boy didn't do anything. The Mishnah Brura doesn't agree with Rabbi Soloveitchik. Mishnah Brura says, he quotes some not such a famous Achron. He quotes some Achron, I forgot the name, Tveris Yerushalayim or something, who says that the little cups, the forks and knives on the table, that they never made a gzeira at all. That you're allowed to even move shalot at tzarach klal. You don't have to have any either or. To move a chair or to move a table, that's only big stuff like that. That's only permissible if it's either at tzarach gufa, because I want to use the table or the chair, or at tzarach mekoma, it's in the way, or mecham letzel, I want to protect it from getting ruined. And shalot at tzarach klal, you're not allowed to move chairs or tables. But the tiny little utensils on the table, and Mishnah Brura quotes Achanim, that there never was a gzeir at all. So Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't think so. He thought that the gzeir was even made on the cups on the table, on the silverware. He thought that it's not permissible to sit and play with the silverware. Totally unnecessarily. That's tiltal shalot at tzarach. The Chumash tells us that the mon, for the 40 years of traveling in the desert, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu caused the miracle to occur, and Mon came down 6 days of the week, Shabbos and Yom Tov, the Mon didn't fall down, and a double portion would fall down on Erev Shabbos or on Erev Yom Tov. Once in a while they had a Shabbos next to Yom Tov, so a triple portion would fall down. So there would be three portions for Erev Shabbos, and for Shabbos, and for Yom Tov. That's a kasha. That's tell me, how come when you have Shabbos next to Yom Tov, why do we say it's sufficient with Lechem Mishnah? Why shouldn't we require Lechem Meshulosh? We shouldn't require three Chalas, because in the Midbar one was Shabbos next to Yom Tov. Rav Shlomo Levilner talks about this. He doesn't have a good answer. So he works on that kasha. So the Pasuk says, when the Mon fell down on Friday, and it was enough for Friday and for Shabbos, it says, Vehechinu Esa Sheyavir. The people should prepare the food on Erev Shabbos, because you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. So they better cook the food on Erev Shabbos in order to have what to eat on Shabbos. That's the simple pshat in Chumash. Esa shetofu eifu, whatever you want to bake, you want to use the mon to bake cakes, to bake bread. Esa shetabash lebashelu, if you want to use the mon to cook it, it should taste whatever you want it to taste like, that's what it tasted like. So if you want to cook it, it should taste like chol, if you want to cook it, it should taste like chicken, like steaks, like chalas, whatever you want, prepare everything in advance, because you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. That's the Pashup Shot. So the Gemara has another level of interpretation on the Pasuk that all food for Shabbos has to have hachana. You have to be making the food, you have to prepare the food in advance, even if you're not, even it's not an issue of doing a malacha on Shabbos. The food will be mukta on Shabbos, mukta with respect to eating. There's a new prohibition. You're not allowed to eat food that's mukta. You're not allowed to eat food on Shabbos that's mukta. On the weekdays, there's no mitzvah to eat food, so there's no din that you need any preparation. But on Shabbos, a yontav, where there's a mitzvah to eat food, so the food, you're only in fulfillment of the mitzvah, if the food had achana mibod yom. So Rashi's opinion is that this is a biblical prohibition, that the issur of handling muktzah, moving muktzah, that's only midirabbanon, that's a gzera that he may forget and carry into the street. Or the Rambam says you want to have it should be a shvisa hanikeres, his observance of Shabbos should constitute, his not doing malacha should constitute a mitzvah, saseh, a kiyama mitzvah. We should see that he's abstaining from malacha because today is Shabbos. But according to Rashi's opinion, all the Tosfos and all the Rishonim disagree, but Rashi's opinion is that the prohibition against eating food that's muktzah is a biblical prohibition. So take for example, we were stunned when we learned Masechet Shabbos, we were stunned to find out the original debate that the Tanoim had regarding muktzah is the following case. Let's say one of the children is going to have a birthday party on Sunday afternoon, so we bought ice cream and we put it in the freezer and it's there for the Sunday afternoon party. Then we decided to eat the ice cream shalashudas. So at the beginning of Shabbos, it was clear, if anybody would ask the Balabasta, do you think you're going to eat the ice cream in the freezer? The answer would have been absolutely not. Or let's say you have Pesach Diga dishes. Pesach Diga dishes, you're not going to use it for Chametz Diga. The next day, you're going to have to buy a new set of Pesach Diga dishes. It's expensive. So let's say they had a set of Pesach Diga dishes. So Erev Shabbos, the beginning of Shabbos, Bein Hashmashis, if anybody would ask the Balabasta, do you think you're going to use the Pesach Diga dishes? Absolutely not. We're saving it for next Pesach. Then in the middle of Shabbos, she finds out that they won the Irish sweepstakes ticket. And she always wanted a new set of Pesach Diga dishes. So she, in the middle of Shabbos, she changes her mind. She's going to use the Pesach Diga dishes for Chum, and she's going to buy a new set. So that's the original Machlekes HaTanoim. Unless I have a tuxedo. I only wear the tuxedo when I go to a wedding. All year long, I never wear. So if anyone would ask me, Erev Shabbos, Bein Hashmashis, do you think you're going to wear the tuxedo Shabbos? The answer is absolutely no. Then someone comes in the middle of the Shabbos and they say, let me see your outfit that you wear for a wedding. Would I be permitted to handle a tuxedo on Shabbos? So what could be mukta over here? Ice cream is ice cream. Tuxedo is tuxedo. What's the Shabbos? Pesach Diga dishes are dishes. So the answer is no. That's the original Machloikas Satanoim. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that if you have oichlim or kelim, if you have the ice cream in the freezer and it's clear that you didn't plan to eat the ice cream on Shabbos, if you would have asked anyone Erev Shabbos, they would say, absolutely no, that ice cream is for the birthday party, or the Pesach, the dishes, or the tuxedo. The answer would be, absolutely no, we do not plan to use these dishes on Shabbos. So Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is that that's mukta. The Chumash says, v'hechinam es asher yaviyu, you need hachana on food, and the Tanoim Adonan, you need hachana for kelim as well, for vessels as well. So any oichlim or any kelim that clearly had no hachana, you're not allowed to handle on Shabbos. According to Rashi, this is a biblical issue. This is anisa deraisa. We paskan like Reb Shimon, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, the author of the Zohar, disagrees with Reb Yehuda. So the Gemara quotes in Masechet Shabbos, every 15 blad Gemara they keep on quoting again. Machlokes Reb Yehuda, Reb Shimon about mukta. So we paskan like Reb Shimon. We often paskan like Reb Shimon. That the ice cream in the freezer is not mukta, and the Pesach Diga dishes are not mukta, and the tuxedo is not mukta. We say that all food is mukhan me'elov, and all kelim are mukhan me'alev. It's considered mukhan. Unless, let's say, a hen lays an egg on Shabbos, so that didn't, the egg wasn't there, wasn't available on Erev Shabbos to eat. So since it came into existence, the egg was there inside the hen, but it was not in a state that you could eat it. So if a hen lays an egg in the middle of Shabbos, so that would be considered muktzah. So according to Rashi, that's called noilad. The thing came into existence in the middle of Shabbos as an oichel. Or let's say a person took raw materials on Shabbos and he made a table, he made a chair out of it. That's a malacha. That's a makaba patish. I make a table or a chair. I take pieces of wood, I take a hammer and nails, and I make a kli. So that's a malacha. Let's say a person didn't know. They made a chair on Shabbos. So we would say that chair didn't exist on Erev Shabbos as a chair. On Erev Shabbos it was just boards of wood. So that would be considered mukta, because it was a kli that didn't exist on Erev Shabbos. Like the egg didn't exist, the hen that lays an egg in the middle of Shabbos, so it didn't exist as an edible egg on Erev Shabbos. It never had any hachana. So there even Reb Shimon would agree to Reb Yudah. That would be noila, that would be mukta. That's what the Gemara has. According to Rashi, that's you're talking about nisa deraisa, to eat the food that had no hachana. Taisus and all the other Rishonim disagree with Rashi. They say, no, the Gemara rejected. The Gemara entertained such an idea, that the muktzah for food that had no achana should be a biblical prohibition, but that's not the accepted opinion. The Gemara in the first daf, some of you may remember, the Gemara in the first page in Maseches Beitzah draws a contrast between Shabbos and Yom Tov. The Gemara said that Shabbos, everybody knows you're not allowed to do malacha, religious people, observant people, learned people. So that we paskin like Reb Shimon that we allow muktzah. The ice cream in the freezer is not muktzah. Pesach, the dishes are not muktzah. And the tuxedo is not muktzah. Don't worry about it. But the Gemara says on Yonta, because people know that you're allowed to do some things, you're allowed to do some things, you're not allowed to do. It's very unclear how far the heta goes. People make mistakes. So on Yonta, we should prohibit muktzah. We should be machmer more on muktzah because the people are too lenient. They take too many leniencies on muktzah. So that's how the Shulchan Aruch paskens, that the ice cream in the freezer on Yonta, that designated for a birthday party after Yom Tov, or the Pesach Digadishes, let's say on Sukkot, Pesach Digadishes would be Muktzah. That's how the Mechaber Paskin, that's how Sfardim follow that Pesach. Ashkenazim followed the Ramah. The Ramah says, we don't follow that opinion. We don't accept that line in the Gemara, that there's a difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. We Paskin Muktzah, this Machloikas of Muktzah, the ice cream in the freezer, and the Pesach Digadishes on Sukkot, we Paskin is not Muktzah. Not on Shabbos, not on Yom Tov. This prohibition of handling muktzeh, Magen Avraham is one of the basic commentaries on the big Shulchan Aruch. So the Magen Avraham explains, Chazon Ish doesn't agree with this, but this was accepted for many centuries. Mishnah Berurah accepts this opinion. So the Magen Avraham says the prohibition against handling muktzeh only applies if you handle it biyad, if you handle it like this. Let's say I have $1,000 bill on the table, and I'm afraid someone's going to come, they're going to walk off with my money. So you're not allowed to pick up the money and move it somewhere else. Money is muktzah mamish, there's no head to tilt at all. So the Shulchan Aruch, the Magen Avraham says, I'm allowed to push it off with my elbow and then kick it with my foot and hide it in one of the bedrooms so that the ganef, who's going to be visited by me, won't walk off with my $1,000 bill. So we assume that tilt the muktzah begufo is muta. Let's say they deliver the mail and they put it through the slot in the door. So let's say in the mail, there are checks and there are bills and there are things that came mechutz l'tchum, there are things that may possibly be muktzah. So you're not allowed to pick up the mail with your hand, but kick the mail with your foot. That's not a problem. To tilt the muktzah begufo is permissible. Even to do with your hands, the Mishnah Berurah writes a big chiddush. Let's say there's some money on the table, so if you move it with your elbow, that's tilt the muktzah begufo. The Magen Avraham says it's permissible. If I want to pick it up with my hand, I just pick up the money with my hand, that's what's prohibited. That's tilt the muktzah biyadayim. That's the normal way to carry, is to carry with your hand. If you walk out in the street and you have things in your pocket, if there's no erev, if you're walking with things in your pocket, it's also a violation of carrying. But we usually visualize one violating carrying, holding the things in his hands. So since the prohibition of muktzah was introduced basically to prevent people from carrying by mistake in the street, so they only prohibited it if you handle the thing with your hands. If you're carrying it in your pockets, we'll have to discuss, it's not really a prohibition of muktzah. So the Mishnah Berurah writes a chiddush. What if I want to move the $1,000 bill with my hands, but I'm not going to pick it up like this, I'm going to push it with my hands like this. Kalachayad. That's not the normal way to carry things. So the Mishnah Berurah writes a chiddush that that's also permissible. Tilta muktzah biyadayim, but kalachayad, he pushes it like this. That's a chiddush. What if the person moves the muktzah without handling it? Let's say the $1,000 bill is on the table. So if I can blow it off the table, let's say, I'll go like this. Let's say I have, there's an electrical fixture, and it has a string, so when you pull, years ago there used to be strings. I don't think they exist anymore. I don't know. So if you pull the string, say you light it, you turn on the lights. So you're not allowed to touch the string. The string is muktzah because klisha malach daliyisa. That's how you turn on the light. So let's say I'll blow this string with my like this. So that's like tilta muktzah begufo. I'm causing the string to move without handling it with my hand. So that would be permissible. So let's say if I can blow the money off of the table, so that would be permissible. Let's say I have a stack of $15,000 bills. So it's not going to blow so easily. That $1,000 bill is going to blow off on the floor, then I'll kick it with my foot. I'll be able to get hide it in the other room. What if I have a stack of bills and it's not going to blow off? So I move it with my arm. Let's say he can't, for some reason or another, he can't move it with his arm. So what if he'll take a plate the plate is not muktzah. He'll take a plate and push the muktzah off of the table by using the plate. So that's what the Gemara calls tilta muktzah min atzad. If you move the muktzah by using your hands, but you're not handling the actual muktzah itself, you're handling a non-muktzah item, and the melu, the muktzah, is being moved off. So the Gemara in different places presents it differently, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes the following explanation to the different Gemaras. If you have a barrel, we said earlier, if you have a barrel, and by mistake you left your wallet on top of the barrel, and you didn't really plan to leave your wallet there, you didn't really intend to leave the wallet there the whole duration of the whole Shabbos. It was shochech, it wasn't meniach. So the barrel never becomes a bosses. So are you permitted to tilt the barrel in order to get the wallet off? So that you're moving the money by handling the barrel. So that's tilta muktzah min atzad. What motivates me to do this? It's not that I want to hide the wallet, not that I want to have the wallet fall on the floor, then I want to kick it away. If that's my intention, then you're not allowed to do that. If my intention is I want to drink some of the wine, I want to open up the barrel, and because I want to have the wallet on top, I can't open up the barrel. So that's tilta muktzah min atzad, letzarach d'avra mutar. So then it's permissible. But if my intention is I want to tilt the barrel in order to get the wallet to fall on the floor, and then I want to kick the wallet to hide it in the other room, that's tilta muktzah min atzad, letzarach d'avra asur. So that you're not allowed to do. Well, let's say the stack of $1,000 bills is on the table. I want to take a plate, a challah tray, or a plate, or whatever, and push the muktzah on the floor. So I'm pushing the muktzah by handling a non-muktzah item, but my whole intention is to get the muktzah, to hide the muktzah. So that's not mutter. That says in Shulchan Aruch that you're not allowed to do that. We have the principle. There is a dispute among the Tanoim, and the accepted opinion is that whatever was muktzah in the beginning of Shabbos, migad is katzoy leben hashmashos, is katzoy lekuli yoyma. So it's interesting. The Gemara in Maseches Beitza raises the question whether yesh muktzah lechatzi Shabbos or ain't muktzah lechatzi Shabbos. So people who don't remember the Gemara in a vanig inside just remember the expression, so they think by mistake. There's no such thing as muktzah for part of Shabbos. So let's say if a bottle smashes in the middle of Shabbos and it breaks into tiny little particles which are absolutely useless, so people think, well, it can't become muktzah in the middle of Shabbos. The Gemara has an expression, ein muktzah lechatzi Shabbos. So this is not correct. This is a misunderstanding, it's a misquotation of the Gemara. If something becomes muktzah in the middle of Shabbos, let's say I cracked open the egg and I ate the egg and I left with the shell will be muktzah. Or if the bottle smashes and it's broken into tiny little particles, so the particles will be muktzah. If it became a piece of junk in the middle of Shabbos, it is muktzah. The expression in the Talmud, ein muktzah lechatzi Shabbos, means a different thing. Although there is a rule that whatever was muktzah in the beginning of Shabbos, migudis katzoy lebein hashmashos, whatever was muktzah as Shabbos entered, remains muktzah for the duration of the whole Shabbos, even though the reason for its being muktzah is no longer present. It only makes sense that it should be muktzah at the beginning of Shabbos. Later on, should not be muktzah. So that's only, you say, whatever was muktzah in the beginning of Shabbos remains muktzah at the end of Shabbos. What if something became muktzah in the middle of Shabbos, then the reason for its becoming muktzah disappeared in the middle of Shabbos? Do you say, migudis katzoi for 10 minutes, since something was muktzah for a little bit of time, it remains muktzah for the rest of Shabbos? Or no? So that's what the Gemara says, ein muktzah lechatzi Shabbos. If something became muktzah in the middle of Shabbos, and then the siba for which it became muktzah disappears, you don't say migudis katzoi for the middle of Shabbos, it remains muktzah for the end of Shabbos. That rule only applies from the beginning of Shabbos. So why taka does it depend on the beginning of Shabbos? So the Rav Soloveitchik explained, he thought that this was all these dinim of mukta are only mid the Rabbanon, but again, called the Tikkun Rabbanon, came the Raisa Tikkun. All the dinim the Rabbanon were patterned after dinim the Raisa. So there was one of the great Goenim who was killed by the Nazis. He survived the Warsaw ghetto uprising, and then he was killed by the Nazis afterwards. A Kozhik Lover Goen. He was a Rav in Kozhik Lov before the First World War. See, after the First World War, there was no more Kozhik Lov. So that was the end of his Rabban. So then when Ramiro Shapira founded the Lublini Yeshiva, he invited this Kozhik Lov Goen to give shirim there. He gave the highest shirim in the Yeshiva. So he has in his tshuvas, the name of his tshuvas sefer is Eretz Tzvi. Not to be confused with other svarim with a similar name. So in his sefer Eretz Tzvi, he quotes that there was a dispute among two great, he learned by the Sochet Shavu Goyim. So there was a machlekes between the Sochet Shavu Goyim and the Chechen of a Rebbe. Sochet Shavu Rebbe and the Chechen of a Rebbe. On Shabbos, one observes Shabbos, is it that every moment of Shabbos has Kedusha Sayyim? So every minute has Kedusha? Or you say no. When you experience the entering of Shabbos, you experience Bein HaShemashos, biblically speaking, on the level of the Raisa, that obligates you to observe the whole of Shabbos. So Rav Soloveitchik said the second way is the more correct, and he showed that this is a famous dispute between the Rosh and the Maharan Rutenberg in the end of Maseches Moikotin. Many of you will remember there is a machlokes. Somebody dies, so all the relatives have to observe Shiva. What if one of the relatives is not yet bar mitzvah? So usually there's a din of chinuch that a child who's old enough to shake a lulav, old enough to do a mitzvah, has to fulfill a mitzvah. Is there a mitzvah of chinuch and observing avelis? The father died. The father's not going to die again. The whole idea of chinuch is train the child now so that he'll be able to fulfill a mitzvah after he comes by mitzvah. The father dies when the child is young, so what are you going to be mechanachim? That when his father dies, he should observe avelis. He's not going to die again a second time. Okay. So there's a machlokes whether there is a din of chinuch. So in Shulchan Aruch, he passed him no din of chinuch. The child would probably not want to go to yeshiva. His father died, his mother died, his brother died. He wants to cry a little bit. But it said in Shulchan Aruch, if the child is younger and he wants to go to cheder, he's not. So there's no wheat paskin, there's no din of chinuch on avelis. There is a din of chinuch on ripping kriya. There is a din of chinuch on ripping kriya because kriya lechud, avelis lechud. But on avelis, wheat paskin, there's no din of chinuch at all. So the shah, so the rush, the last piece of the rush, in Maseches Moikotin, the end of Moikotin has all the laws of Avelis, the third parak of Moikotin. So the Rosh has this machlokes with his Rebbe. His Rebbe was in Maharam Rutenberg. So the Maharam Rutenberg said, discusses this situation, someone dies, and the child becomes bar mitzvah in the middle of Shloshim. So if, let's say, a person lives, years ago they didn't have telephones, so it took a while till someone is notified from a different continent that a relative died. So let's say a relative died, and the person in America finds out 2 or 3 weeks later. So does he have to observe Avelis or not? So the Gemara distinguishes, did he find out within Shloshim or after Shloshim? If he finds out within Shloshim, that's called the Shmur Kareva, soon after the death. If he finds out after Shloshim already, Shmur Rechaika, so you don't observe Shiva and Shloshim, you only observe Avelis Yoimech. So the Maharam Rutenberg has a discussion, what if the child is not bar mitzvah when a relative dies, and he becomes bar mitzvah within 30 days? Should you say, now the child is bar mitzvah, and now he's of age to observe avelis, and he knows, he just found out that his father died, so he should observe avelis like one who hears in the middle of Shloshim? Or should you say, no, that he doesn't have to? So the Maharam Rutenberg talks about this. And it brings a raya from the Gemara. The Gemara says that if a child becomes bar mitzvah in the middle of Shabbos, how can a child become bar mitzvah at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Shabbos? So there's one opinion that if the child is born 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 13 years later, he becomes, let's say Moshe Rabbeinu is born on Zion Adar 2 o'clock in the afternoon, he becomes bar mitzvah 13 years later on Zion Adar 2 o'clock in the afternoon. There's one opinion like that. We usually don't accept that opinion. We usually assume he comes by mitzvah the beginning of Zayin Adar, the night before Zayin Adar, not the me'es li'es literally. The Gemara says you become by mitzvah me'es li'es. Half of the Rishonim, half of the Achrayim. I remember Rav Soloveitchik thought that was a joke. He thought Balabata make a mistake. But half of the Rishonim, half of the Achrayim say like that. The child only becomes by mitzvah literally me'es li'es, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And even if one doesn't accept that opinion, becomes by mitzvah the night before Zayin, the night of Zayin Adar, but the Gemara still says sometimes a child can become by mitzvah in the middle of the day. Shtei Cyrus only go in the middle of the day. So the Gemara says, if the child was a katan the first half of the day, he becomes by mitzvah 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Is he obligated to observe the remaining of Shabbos only min ha-Torah or min ha-Rabbanim? So we paskin min ha-Torah, the Gemara says. From 2 o'clock on, he has to observe Shabbos min ha-Torah. If he being mechal Shabbos b'shege, he has to bring a korban chatos. So that Maharam Rutmer brings a raya from the Gemara that you see that there's no dichui by mitzvahs, even though the obligation to observe Shabbos set in at Bein Hashmashes of the beginning of Shabbos, and the child was not by mitzvah then. So there's room to argue the point and say he doesn't have to observe the end of Shabbos after 2 o'clock, min ha-Torah, only midi rabbanon. You see from the Gemara there's no dichui yitzel mitzvahs. So he says over here also, the death of the relative occurred when he was a katan, and that's what's mechayiv in aveilus. So the Maharam Rutmer thinks that nonetheless, even though the child was a katan, but if he becomes by mitzvah within 30 days, he's obligated to observe the aveilus after he'll become by mitzvah. And the Rosh writes, it's not fair to disagree with my Rebbe, he passed away. That's like fighting with a lion. If the lion is alive, he'll devour me. The lion is dead, so I'm going to pick a fight with the lion and I'll win, of course. So he uses an expression from the Mishnah, Eimishivin Sari Lachamoso. It's not fair to pick a fight with the lion after he dies. And my Rebbe passed away, so of course I'm going to argue with him, I'm going to win. If the Rebbe would be alive, he would eat me up. He would slug up everything I have to say. But he says, what can I do? I don't understand. He disagrees with the Rebbe. So he says, what kind of a tzushtel? What did the Maharam Rutmer give a raya from Shabbos? And Shabbos, every moment of Shabbos has Kedushas Hayayim. So the child, after he's by mitzvah, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, he's obligated to observe Shabbos. Masheni come over here, the kvur is machayiv. So the Maharam Rutmerg obviously thought not so. Maharam Rutmerg thought that the experiencing the Knesset HaShabbos is what machayiv want to observe Shabbos. So that's what the Kozhuk Lava points out. This machloik is between the Sochach of a Rebbe and the Chechen of a Rebbe, whether every moment of Shabbos has Kedushas Hayayim, that's machayiv us to observe the Issa Malocha. Or the Tchilas Hayom of Shabbos is really machlokes the Rosh and the Maharam Rutenberg. Rav Soloveitchik thought that many different Gemaras seem to indicate the Mechudish Dika way, that it's the experiencing of the Knesset Hayom of Shabbos, the beginning, the first moments of Shabbos, obligate us to observe the remaining part of Shabbos. Not that every minute has Kedushas Hayom and every minute is Mechayim. It's the entering of Shabbos. So that's why all the laws of Muktzah are established by Migudis Katzoy Leben Hashmashes. Everything is established by the beginning of Shabbos. When Shabbos enters, if something was Muktzah, it's going to remain Muktzah throughout the day. The Gemara has similar dinim b'negir to, let's say you made an Erev. To be permitted, you have an Erev. The poles and the strings that go around the area, then you have to leave a box of matzahs that everybody has to own b'shutva. So let's say the box of matzahs is mistakenly eaten up before Shabbos enters. So you're not allowed to carry, even though you have the Erev is up, what we call the Erev, but the Erev, the box of matzahs is gone. If the box of matzahs is eaten up in the middle of Shabbos, then you're allowed to continue to carry. The rule is Shabbos, Hova, Hutra, Hutra. Everything is determined by the beginning of Shabbos. Now, so Leitchik thought that all of these dinim in the Gemara, these dinim are all on the level of the Rabbanim, but they're all patterned after the din d'oraisa that the Tchilas Knesset Hayom of Shabbos is what obligates us to observe Shabbos. The Kosher Glava Goyen writes, interesting, he was killed by the Nazis. He didn't have was a Shaykh to consider this, but today we have it all the time. Let's say a person is in one, we have an international dateline. So the person is on one side of the dateline. Let's say he's to the east of the dateline and it's Friday. Then in the middle of Shabbos, he flies over to the west of the dateline and it becomes Shabbos afternoon. It's Friday afternoon, goes to the other side of the dateline, becomes Shabbos afternoon. He never experienced Bein Hashmashes of Shabbos. So he says he's not obligated biblically to observe Shabbos over there. Even though over there, everybody's keeping Shabbos because they experienced Bein Hashmashes of Tchilos of Shabbos. He thinks probably mid the Rabbanon, he's obligated to observe Shabbos. Interesting, a man who was killed by the Nazis should have even to think about, to dream about such an idea. Today, it's Maisim Mechol Yom, people flying by plane to the east, to the west. It happens all the time. People switch from one middle of Sfira Soima, they go from one side of the dateline to the other side of the dateline. So he writes about this in his sefer. The laws of Muktzah, we pass on the laws of Muktzah are all mid the Rabbanon. But there's a good reason why the Chachamim introduced the laws of Muktzah. The Ravid quotes from the Gemara to help us not to carry on Shabbos. Then the Rambam said his additional reason to enhance the observance of the mitzvah of not doing malacha, there should be a shvisa hanikeres. And all the dinim derabbana were patterned after dinim deraisa, called the tikkun rabbana came deraisa tikkun. Very fascinating topic. As I say, when we studied the Gemara, we were surprised to hear that it's not the way we thought. We thought that the pen and the pencil is muktzah. It's not at all muktzah. It's a different prohibition of klisha malachta liyisa. Muktzah mamish, there's no heta to move. If you have money on the table, you're not allowed to move it. Not l'tzarach gufa, not l'tzarach makoma. You have to move it by blowing the money, by moving with the elbow, and so on. But klisha malachta liyisa is different. Taisus in the beginning of Beitza has a haichocha from the Gemara that, let's say, by mistake, you left a hammer in the middle of the table, and there's no room. You want to put food on the table on Friday night, so you're permitted to pick up the hammer, letzarach makomo, to get it out of the way. So when you pick up the hammer, you have to drop it. Once you take it off of the table, you have to put it on the floor. So Tosfos shows from the Gemara, no, once it's in your hand, you're handling it, so you're allowed to carry it. I have 20 rooms in my home. I'm allowed to carry it all the way to the shed and put it in the shed where it belongs with all the other tools. I don't have to drop it the first available opportunity. What if by mistake I have money in my pocket? Erev Shabbos, I'm walking around and I daven in shul, I realize I have money in my pocket, so I'm moving muktzah around. So there, the Ramah says the same. Since you're walking around with the money anyway, so there's not, and there's an Erev, let's say the whole area has an Erev, so there's no need to shake out the money at the first opportunity. You can wait till you go home, and then you'll shake out your pocket, and then shine. Everything will be fine. And the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Vilna Gaon, and all of the poskim disagree that kula that Tosfos said, once you're handling the hammer, you can continue to go further. That's only by klisha malach b'liyisa. By money is muktzah mamish. That hefta wouldn't apply to money. Tiltal muktzah is much more chomer, very different from tiltal klisha malach b'liyisa. And that hefta, that once you have it, it doesn't cause any additional violation by continuing to carry further, would not apply. There are many cheerful discussions in Hilchas Muktzah. If the Moel performed the bris on Shabbos, what does he do with the knife after he finishes? The knife is a klisha malach d'liyisa. But if it's a mila bizmana, then you're allowed to handle the knife. So do you say, well, for this Shabbos, it's a klisha malach d'liyisa? Because he knows he has a bris. He's allowed to handle it all he wants. Or do you say, no, it's still a klisha malach d'liyisa? And the second he finishes the bris, he has to drop the knife. Or do you say, no, once he's holding the knife, he can keep on holding it until he puts it down. Once he puts it down, that's the end of the story. So there's a big pilpul on Shulchan Aruch on this. Hilchas Muktzah, a very cheerful topic. We should all try through the observance of the laws of Muktzah to be a little more observant on the level of the dinim derais. Thank you very much.
We're a little bit pressed for time, but we'll take a couple of questions. Rabbi Gold.
If the Erev itself, the wire, the pulp, comes down to 2 o'clock in the afternoon, does it fill out the carriage?
If the wire falls down, or the poles fall down, so the Gemara says, do you say that since you were permitted to carry in the beginning of Shabbos, you're allowed to carry throughout Shabbos? The Gemara has a principle.
If the Eru fell down in the middle of Shabbos,
are you allowed to carry? So the Abshlemit Pluger has a tshuva. The certain communities used to have a problem. The Goyim always will pull down the wire. Lahach is the Jews. So he has a chiddush. He says the main part of the Erev is the two poles on the side. The wire on top is only needed midirabbanan, he says. And if it ripped down in the middle of Shabbos, you're permitted to continue to carry. That's not the generally accepted opinion. What's assumed is that all three, the two poles on the side and the pole on top, or the wire on top, everything is part of the structure of the Erev. And if the walls fall down, then you're not allowed to carry. The Gemara says if I have a building, it's a Rishus HaYochid, and then in the middle of Shabbos, the government sends workers and they use dynamite and they knock down all the walls, so there's no more Rishus HaYochid. So then you don't say, Ho v'hutra hutra, since in the beginning of Shabbos you're allowed to carry. The Gemara has it, when you have a new concept of having Rishus HaYochid with an Issa Tiltal, on the level of the Reis, it doesn't exist. If you have a Rishus HaYochid, well, you're not allowed to carry. So if in the beginning of Shabbos you're allowed to carry, then you're allowed to continue to carry later. But if it's no longer a Rishus HaYochid because the walls fell down, or the poles fell down, or the wire fell down, then we assume that you're not allowed to carry. That opinion of Shlomo Kluger has not been accepted. He says if the wire falls down, you're allowed to continue to carry on Shabbos. It has not been accepted.
All right, good.
especially if it has a clicker on it, so that the stomach is, please, that looks amamish. But realize that you have your car key in your pocket, so according to Mr. Kaur, you can take it, you can continue walking wherever you're going to walk.
According to the Ramah, you can continue going if you have an Erev. Yeah.
Right. So now I'm now I'm home. My car's in shul though. My key's still in my pocket. I wear the pants anyways. Can I put those pants back on, knowing that the key's in it, and then wear it back to shul?
More correct. When he put the keys in the pocket, he didn't really think he's going to leave it there the whole Shabbos. That's shofeach. So the pocket never became muktzah. So he should really shake out the trousers and shake out the whole thing and leave it home. Should really leave all the keys at home. Yeah.
Right, Colin.
The doctor prescribed that my wife should use a cane on Friday in Shabbos. We didn't have a cane. Was it permissible to use an umbrella? An umbrella is luckily we use, so you can tell you.
If you can get a cane from the neighbor, it's better to get a cane from the neighbor if you can. I live in an apartment building, so we have 100 neighbors in one building. If you don't have an apartment,
use the umbrella if there's no other neighbor.
Yeah, that's Litzarah Gufa. That's Litzarah Gufa. You have no choice.
I'm a little confused. If something breaks, a glass or a bottle breaks on Shabbos, then you have to clean up because it's a danger.
So the Gemara says, Tiltal Muktzah is not a Malacha Derais, it's not a Malacha Midirabban, it's only a Gzera Midirabban. So whatever, there's a Chashash Hezek, so we permit you to clean up. But let's say the broken bottle broke in the backyard but nobody goes there anyway, and there's no Chashash, anyone is going to get hurt, then the broken particles are Muktzah. But on the table also it's Muktzah, but if you're afraid someone's going to get hurt, then you're allowed to move it away. Correct?
Okay, thank you very much. We're,